Hey guys, welcome to the Wild PPC Bunch podcast. My name is Lazar and I'm a PPC nerd. I have over 10 years of experience in online advertising and currently I'm the owner of the growing Amazon advertising agency called Seller's Alley.
And I'm Brent, the owner of AMZ Pathfinder. I started this company 5 years ago and we've been working in online advertising since 2013.
Every week we will spend around 30 minutes covering one topic and it will get nerdy, I promise. We'll prepare a topic covering everything from PPC basics, in-depth strategy, and current trends.
One thing's for sure, you won't be bored and you will hear insights, tactics, and ideas straight from two experienced agency owners. So strap in for the ride and enjoy.
All right, it's Lazar from Seller's Alley and...
Brent from AMZ Pathfinder. Hello.
Yeah, it's our first time, so guys, like, don't get harsh and everything. Like, So today we wanted to talk about Amazon PPC after Corona, and is it already after Corona or is it still during Corona time? So
I don't know. That's a good question because I feel like the assumption would be. By saying that, like it's over, but you know, it's not necessarily over, but we have seen the roller coaster that's happened in March, April, and now into mid-May when we're recording this. So, you know, more flare-ups in the future, potentially, you know, more countries affected, potentially, but we're going to talk about what we've seen so far, I guess. So the bulk of it so far. Yeah.
Yeah. And since kind of all of the countries are closed and like you're in your own bubble in your own country, you don't have a feeling of what's going on in other countries. Like Brent, your clients are mostly in Europe, like if somebody doesn't know, and my clients are mostly in the US. So we kind of have different perspectives on this topic. So we prepared a couple of questions and like a couple of subtopics about Corona and all of it. So maybe we can go through all of it and like discuss what's going on. So the first one.
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first one is like, what really happened, Brent? Like, what did you see like that changed? Like, what's the first thing that happened? Like that you realized that Corona is there?
So I think I realized it personally, you know, when it starts to affect your own life, right? This is the kind of selfish human condition, right? Like, oh, now this is real. And, you know, I was in Prague for the event for Augustus for the PPC, well, not PPC Congress, sorry. One of his many events he's always throwing. And this was, you know.
Yeah, it's European Seller Conference.
A lot of Amazon sellers were there. Yeah, you were there too, right?
Yeah, both of us.
And that's when things got real, right? We all had to flee back to our countries. I remember you and Yana had to stay on for a couple of days longer through the weekend. But that's the same time when I look back on the data that I see that things really started to change in both the US and the European markets, specifically the European ones first, because they were afflicted first. And then yeah, that's how things kind of spread to the US eventually, right? So I would say mid-March and then kind of like the next week after that was when things really hit the US.
Yeah, literally that. And like when you look first countries that were hit, like Italy and Spain, those markets, mm-hmm. to be honest, are the smallest one when it comes to Amazon. And when it comes to Amazon PPC, mm-hmm. like we don't get a lot of accounts that are really big in those markets. Most of them are like side markets, like a backup plan for every seller in Europe or in the US.
Or just a growth channel that's longer term. You know, we have a lot of clients that are planting their flags there with an eye towards like 2 to 3 year timeline. We have a few clients that have medium sized, you know, maybe even edging into like larger accounts, but yeah, not like the biggest ones for sure. And I would agree, Spain and Italy are the smallest. And I think Italy, it wasn't super noticeable. Really, I don't really have much of the data that says that Italy really stood out. But there was, I think, a spike in orders, you know, an increase. But it's so small because the marketplace is not that big. It was hard to tell.
Yeah, definitely. That's the main issue. Like the market is not big and you cannot see the difference. Like first thing that we saw in US, like everything went crazy. And like in all possible directions, from some guys having Christmas every day to other guys with like locking their businesses. Like one of the first things, like what we realized happened, like huge drop. And like literally from like going pretty well and 1 week we had like 50% on what was happening in the account, and after that, like, bam, everything down. Like, one of the worst accounts had like numbers down for like 90% or something, and that's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, I would say we had a quarter of clients that suffered in like a real way, that actually had some like noticeable sales decrease, or maybe are in categories that are not at all conducive to people being like holed up at home. And so, yeah, 20-25% of them suffered. You know, some of them to the point where they put a big freeze on spend, not entirely, because we really discourage clients from doing that, like 100% stopping ad spend, but stopping it in a large way, like really, really cutting it down big time.
Yeah. And like on the other hand, when you look like what happened positive for some guys, like first guys that they feel like that saw positive stuff were guys that were selling supplements, that are selling supplements.
Right. Yeah.
People want to protect and like they want to boost their immunity and everything. And like the moment when quarantine started, when people started like locking themselves in their houses, like whole bunch of new categories emerged, like a good sellers. I don't know what did you see with your accounts, but like we had like yoga stuff or like do it yourself or craftsmanship or like literally that kind of products like started selling like crazy. We could see like increase for 4 or 5 times in sales during like the biggest lockdown.
Well, I think there was an initial shock, right? So I'm looking at some data right in front of me here. So like the week of March 8th, March 15th is when we really saw the difference between the two. The first thing was the drop in impressions. And I have a theory about this. I espoused on another podcast with someone, but basically Amazon changed the rules of the game. You know, they made a lot of ad positions altered or disappeared entirely. So therefore, you know, the number of impressions that was available, the ad inventory shrunk a lot. And we still, to this day, you know, if I look at the impressions from that early March, late February to now, we still haven't recovered in total impressions, which would suggest to me that despite the lower cost per click, which we also saw for the last couple of weeks now, like, you know, going on 2 months, the actual number of ad slots is much lower. Therefore, our click-through rate is far higher, but it's not because we, you know, suddenly became the world's best geniuses of like writing ad copy, and all of our clients' products, you know, were the most amazing products in the category, so the click-through rate doubled. It's because Amazon removed a lot of the ad positions on the product page, and the those in like rest of search, I heard they modified those as well. I ran this by a couple people. They seem to agree. I don't know if you noticed the same thing while I was with the...
I completely agree with you. One of the things that I saw that happened, like, you know, frequently bought together section on product listing page, it was gone.
Right.
And like...
Right, it just turned into like books or something, right? Wasn't it like, buy a book? You're like, I don't want a book. I want a shoe that's related to the shoe I'm trying to buy, you know?
Yeah, for a couple of weeks, Amazon tried really hard to slow down sales and shipment. Mm-hmm. And they had like 30-day shipment in time and so on, but like in real life it never was 30 days. Like most of the time it was like 7 to 10 days, but they wanted to slow down sales. Basically, that was the first thing that happened, and one of the first thing that happened as well, they started increasing like how many people they're hiring. So they first hired 100,000 people. And in the next batch, they hired 75,000 people. And
right. Yeah, that was my memory. It was 100 and then, yeah, you know, just shy of 200,000, which they've probably even increased since then. I haven't kept up on the
thing, yeah,
which
probably.
Is amazing. And that was just in the US alone, right? That those numbers were specific to US.
Yeah, literally. It's a huge number. But like they did a really good stuff there. And like what I saw today, like in one of the newspapers, I saw that Jeff is going to be the first guy to hit trillion in like six years or something. I think this time helped a lot to him for that.
Yeah, I mean, basically look at it this way. This is how I've positioned it to my team, is like we unexpectedly for a lot of clients came across a quarter four or like a Christmas level sales, and like 30-35% of clients for us, you know, just looking at that, a lot, we had a fat middle clients that like, you know, didn't really go either way, which is actually good considering all the craziness. And maybe they just had some issues with fulfillment, warehousing, FBM, which I'm sure we'll talk about just next year. But yeah, a lot of clients had this huge unexpected Christmas in March/April. And Amazon as a company became responsible in the US at least, and you know, parts of Europe too, UK, for fulfilling like a large portion of the population's needs now that people are, you know, either too scared to go outside or at risk, or just obeying, you know, the governmental orders to do so. Whatever the case may be, you know, it falls on the delivery people, and you know, you could argue the people that are just equally as vulnerable who are working for Amazon doing delivery, to like take this immense like infrastructure burden on. And Amazon, like for the first time ever, you really saw the cracks in the system. Like the machine started to groan, you know, it was like under the weight of the what we've done, you know, as a society. So I think e-commerce wins in general. That much is clear.
Yeah, like
you can see, had to make some drastic changes.
You can literally see that the e-commerce is like completely not even future, it's today. And like other stuff are like having troubles with situations like Corona. But like on the other hand, there is a whole bunch of different people that are working on a whole bunch of different stuff, like police officers or healthcare system. Like they're super important. And like, of course, nobody's talking about people that are doing deliveries. And Amazon is doing a lot of deliveries at this time. And like, Amazon is getting out of this super strong and way, way stronger than anybody I think expected. They had some hiccups, but everything is working mm-hmm. fine. But for the sellers, what I can see that happened for smaller sellers were affected more, because like when you're a big seller, you're not a startup anymore. You're the guy that wants to create systems, that wants to be sure that everything is working properly in every situation, and has enough people to work on different stuff. And if one thing is not working, they're going to try another one or so on. But obviously, because they're bigger, they're not like, most of them are not corporations. So it's not super slow to make changes. They are still flexible enough to make changes. So when they saw that one of the things that happened, like restocking, that was a huge one. It's still a huge one. Like you could see in a whole bunch of groups, like people saying like, oh, there's a trick. Like if you open a page like twice, you're able to add like 2 times 50 units of the product. And you're like, okay, dude, that's not going to work like in a long run.
Try this one weird trick. Jeff Bezos hates him. Yeah.
yeah.
Like, and I agree with that restocking. So that comes from two angles. So you know, one of the questions we have down here on our ideas for this is like, who are the winners and losers? And I think one thing we talked about is who are the winners? People who do have infrastructure, like you mentioned, who are maybe medium to small size businesses. They got a team, but they're agile enough, like you said, to really be nimble and say, all right, well, we can see there's going to be a problem with warehouses. Let's get FBM sorted out or some other kind of fulfillment method. And I think if we had to put someone in the winners category, it would be those that didn't rely entirely on Amazon to do everything for them. And they had some kind of channel or fulfillment method set up alternatively, and that allowed them to pivot into that, because we saw clients that, you know, seamlessly, you know, almost like a ballet dancer, you know, gracefully moved from, oh, FBA, oh, FBM. Now here we are over here, and sales continued. And then Amazon, I think, has accordingly like rewarded people for that, because, you know, I've talked to people on Amazon through this and they say, yeah, we're encouraging our sellers to like try other things besides FBA, which is not something they've said, no, to my memory, ever before.
Yeah, like one of the first things that you learned about Amazon like years ago is like, be FBA, don't be FBM, because you're giving some fee to Amazon and you're going to show up higher on like organic search position, or Amazon is going to like boost you a bit more just because the percentage that they're getting. But now like it's for the first time when you hear that Amazon is like helping people to become FBM. And like in our case as an agency, we see like maybe 25 or 30% of sellers that switched, and they didn't leave FBA. Don't get me wrong. They just have option number two now. And
I think the blended model is the more successful one, actually. You know, so maybe your high volume ones, you do FBA, but then FBM you have ready to go in case those go out and you can switch it over. Or if there's another situation with a warehouse, for instance, here in France, and we're recording this mid-May, but just like, you know, as a time capsule, but just for example, some of the warehouses, if not all of them, are closed right now due to a court order. So I ordered something from Amazon France, and I received it from Germany. So, you know, that's another workaround, I guess.
Yeah. So Okay, well, when it comes to FBM, a whole bunch of people ask, like, should we create new campaigns or should we, like, add new ad groups or whatever? Like, what we did, for example, and I'm pretty sure that you can agree on this one, what we did is when sellers created new ASINs or created FBM, we added ASINs to the current campaigns, basically to the same ad groups where their FBA products were. So those campaigns had traction because, like, if they started everything from scratch, they would need like 3-4 weeks at least to get some traction and history in those campaigns. So, like, for those that don't know, like, why do you need history and traction in campaign? Basically, if you create something new and, like, create a campaign with whatever keyword targeting or, like, whichever targeting, Amazon is not going to help you to get a whole bunch of clicks or everything just because you are willing to spend a lot of money on it. But the thing is, they want to compare your performance to others. They want to see what's going to be your click-through rate comparing to others, what's your conversion rate going to be comparing to others in your niche. And depending on that, you're going to get maybe a better CPC as well. So, like, if you compare, like, if Brent and me had, like, the same product selling and we had different amount of reviews, different amount of sales, and we both had the same campaign with the same keywords, and, like, I had a new one and he had the old one, he would probably had, like, better CPC overall.
Yeah, so expected conversion rate, you know, CPC, people, I think, are often, this is getting pretty in the weeds, but, you know, there's a whole system that goes into determining ad rank, right? It's not just like, well, I'm Lazar, I got 10 bucks and I'm going to pay 10 bucks for this. It's really like, okay, well, what's going to sell? What's the history for this keyword tied to this ASIN? You know, theories abound about, you know, quality score on Amazon, which we can't see on, like, Google Ads and other ad platforms, but it definitely exists. You know, it's part of the ad rank consideration. And yeah, it's a valid point, Lazar, and we do the same thing. So, you know, if someone's got FBM, we switch out the SKUs and then problem solved. It's the same ASIN. So, you know, yeah, it's all tied to that same product. And the thing I think is more dangerous than switching out a SKU, because I assume things are going to run pretty same after you do that. But with, like, changing a price, you know, usually when someone changes a price drastically in one direction, that's the thing that's going to have a big impact on conversion rate and ACoS. And those things are tied to, you know, what a lot of clients keep and hold as, like, KPIs. So if your price goes up a lot, well, those keywords that suddenly worked, you know, a week ago are no longer going to convert at the same level. And similarly, if you have it much lower, well, you know, the conversion rate might be great, but your ACoS is going to be in pain because now your average order value is dropped. So it's a two-way street for sure.
Yeah, it's really hard to balance between everything, like, just like with stock amount, like, you're limited with the units that you're able to sell, and some of the sellers decided to stop PPC, the others decided to keep it the same, literally, the others decided to decrease bids. Like, what did you do on your end?
Yeah, I think more than anything, we had clients asking us, what are you doing? And then we had us at the same time messaging certain clients and saying, we're doing this. So it was like a double-edged communication. And I did put it out in our newsletter too, like, hey, this is something we're thinking about and looking at. We expect this to impact us pretty soon. And then it did. You know, I was trying to write a little bit about mindset too. But, you know, ultimately we're an agency that's trying to deliver value based on a couple of different axes. And one of those is, like, we can do a better job at ads. So here's what we're here to do. And as an agency, just like you, we can see across many accounts and many marketplaces, in our instance with the EU. So we can see trends before they happen, other places, before they hit the rest of the markets. So we can anticipate reasonably, like, here's what we should do. And for many clients, that was a question of altering bids because now the conversion rates were different. You know, a lot more people were on Amazon. The click-through rate was higher, which was a bit deceptive because, as we mentioned, the ad inventories changed. But the conversion rates, and I do have data on this, you know, I could read it off real quick. So typically we run, you know, closer to 10.5-10% overall conversion rate. But in that March period, that started dropping to 9.7, 9.35, 8.4, 8.1. 8.1. It's holding at about 8.1 last couple of weeks, but we're still suffering. You know, the conversion rate is still down slightly. You know, the coronavirus is not over, as we kind of talked about at the start of the episode. The big panic period is, but conversion rate is still down. So that means that bids have to go down with it, right? Those two things move in tandem if you want to maintain the same ACoS levels and kind of you know, money in, money out situation. So that was our approach.
Well, I completely agree with you on that. We had one interesting situation with client that was making almost $250,000 a week. And during Corona, he dropped to like 50K. And our main target for him was to keep real ACoS or blended ACoS or tacos, depending who you ask how they call it. It's basically spend as a percentage
of
overall revenue.
Yeah, we call it blended, but I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, so our goal was to keep it under 10%. Like, that's the main goal as an agency to do that. He literally told us, like, we don't care about anything else. We want real ACoS down, and that's it. So when he started experiencing that huge drop, it's not like that we did anything wrong with the account or anything. Just like the amount of impressions and the amount of people interested in the product, like it dropped. So what we tried to do, first we tried, like, we needed to reach out to clients and tell him, like, okay, you have a problem at this point. Are you willing? Like, since he had a lot of stock. So we could bid more comparing to, like, we shouldn't go passive in that situation. We should try to get as much as possible. So what we did basically there, we had conversation with client, and we increased spend, to be honest. And that was like the main thing what we did. And we monitored if PPC sales were increasing comparing to organic sales. So I know that you guys in AMZ Pet Finder and us as well are monitoring spend revenue from PPC versus organic. So, like, you always aim to be at around 35%. Like, that's something pretty healthy. And, like, what we did, we tried to increase spend and keep that number at around 35, since he already was around that number. So, unfortunately, organic didn't follow up. But what we suggested to client to do some other stuff apart from PPC and add some extra stuff, like working with newsletters or some social stuff. So when organic increased, we had basically that real ACoS or blended ACoS back on track.
Yeah, blended is something that a lot of our, I would say, larger clients are really concerned with too. And rightfully so. I think that it's a really important metric to track. And, you know, we have some control over that, but there are factors like a pandemic or seasonality that are going to affect it in a very big way that's out of our control. So 10%, yeah, that's reasonable. But if someone's sales drop by 75-80%, yeah, that's going to really hurt your ability to spend, unless that you're able to you know, convince them to take some other measures to do it. We also had clients that, because Amazon was so jammed up, they had a lot more sales come through their websites. And so some of them shifted from, like, you know, 1/3 of the sales on their websites to half or even 2/3 in some cases, things switched over. And some of them are still feeling the strength of that now. You know, that's still ongoing. So talk about, you know, diversification, which is another maybe angle of, like, who are the winners and losers. I think people who are more diversified, you know, eggs in multiple baskets, right?
Yeah. Literally, I completely agree with you. So yeah, well, the idea for this podcast was, like, for each episode to be about 25 minutes, and we're almost done. Brent, do you want to talk more about Corona, or should we, like, wrap it up and continue in some other episode about other stuff?
Well, how about this? I mean, what are the next steps? This is maybe the last thing to touch on. What are the next steps for now? Like, what are you advising clients do? What are you guys doing? I'm curious. This is also the reason I'm asking. What are you guys doing right now for you know, clients? How are things holding? And yeah, do you have any accounts that stop spending? And because we I think we did maybe one or two, but
like zero spend?
Yeah, like really stopped, like put the brakes on entirely, which I think is you know, a bit less common.
Yeah. Well, we didn't have anybody that, like, stopped everything just because they were afraid that they're going to lose some ranking there. But overall, like, that's the interesting thing. I didn't know that somebody, like, completely turned off everything.
I should probably ask our operations person, but I think we have one or two that probably paused entirely. And, you know, my mind, the only reason to do that would be if you have such a poor conversion rate that it no longer makes sense to advertise, or you just have no more stock to sell. And it could have been for the second reason, because if someone has had issues with getting things out of China, you know, in the initial COVID situation there in the early part of the year / end of last year, and then they also were constrained with sending products in, that's a really deadly combination for your inventory levels. And if you didn't have that FBM lined up, like we talked about, that could be pretty bad, you know, so that could be a good reason to stop spending. But mostly it's been clients pausing and slashing spend because of inventory and because of conversion rates.
And
some of them have gone on pause with us too. So
I'm a bit old school for that. I prefer decreasing bids to like 2 cents and keeping it that way until you're almost out of stock. And when you're with like a couple of units, you just close the listing. So it's kind of old school method of how not to lose BSR that much. And like not to be punished by Amazon when you're out of stock, because like this is the situation when it's not your fault that you're out of stock, kind of.
Yeah. So do you recommend that to your clients that they close the listing or alter it when the stock runs up? Because that's one of these other Amazon chestnuts. You know, everyone's always talking about that one.
Well, it's always a thing. Like there are always positive and negative sides, and nothing is like completely proven. Like with Amazon, the main thing is like Amazon never comes in front of people and tells like, okay, this works, this doesn't work, and you should do this or you shouldn't do this. So you should figure it out on your own in different situations what happened. Like these lessons are pretty expensive. Like when you're out of stock, like try not to be in that situation when you have a chance. Like, but what we suggest clients and to do at this point is like, if you're almost out of stock, try to optimize spend as much as possible, because sales are going to happen this or another way. And like what you want to do is you want to keep your PPC for like cross-targeting ASINs, like for defending your products, like 100% sure for that, rather than to have some other showing up on your product. I would definitely show up as much as possible if I have product in stock. But if I'm running out of stock, I would try to optimize everything. And yeah, one of the things that I always remember is that for sponsor brand ads, like in the past, everybody was like, okay, they create the ad and it pauses automatically when you're out of stock. But now it works, and now it can show only your logo. So double check headline search ads or sponsor brand ads, and make sure that they're not wasting money just to show your logo. I'm sure that most of you guys have a really cool logo, but there is smarter way how to spend money.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. Maybe we can do an episode on those at some point too.
Yeah, definitely. We should. Okay. I think we're good for today. It's a solid one for first one. Well,
sounds good.
Yeah, guys. So on our website, you have an option to send us a message or email. Please do. Please do if you have some questions or you want us to discuss some specific topic, and any kind of feedback is something that we highly recommend. Yeah, and that's it for today.
And would appreciate it.
Yep.
Sure. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.